It's been, oh gosh, almost 40 years, I think, since the Granville train crash happened, which was, of course, in January. And most days, Bruce White looks down at the tattoo on his right hand where soot got embedded in his injury because he was a part of the Granville train crash on January the 8th, 1977, which is the worst railway accident we've ever had here in Australia. Bruce survived, but 83 people died. Two women he'd reassured after the initial derailment didn't, when the Bold Street Bridge collapsed on the back of the third carriage and the front of the fourth at Granville, of course, killing many people. Bruce is one of the survivors who's able to contribute to his own rescue by using a jack, which was passed to him through a hole. And so he's able to leverage up a railway stanchion, which allowed him to get free from the wreck. He spent 10 days in hospital after his rescue and had 6 months off work due to nerve damage on his leg. And he joins me now. Bruce, can you tell me a bit about that fateful day?
Yeah, I can, Roderick. I worked for the Department of Agriculture in the city, and I used to drive to Wentworthville Station, park there, catch any train into the city. That particular day, I caught a train at Wentworthville, saw a lot of people standing on Parramatta Station, so I thought, I'll get to work earlier. So I got off the train that I was on and actually got on the train that the bridge fell on top of. So if I'd stopped on the original train, I wouldn't have been involved in Granville.
Because it was a mountains train, wasn't it?
It was a Blue Mountains train. It was school holidays. It had heaters on it, had gas cylinders that were active because they had the heaters on, or maybe they didn't have the heaters on. The gas cylinders erupted anyway because it was a fairly warm day.
Yeah.
And they were wooden carriages. It was the heaviest locomotive on the line, and that certainly didn't help, going under the bridge. Because
it sort of clipped the bridge, didn't it? Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, happened was that the locomotive being the heaviest on the line caused the rails to split. And the investigation sort of found that, the sleepers hadn't been maintained properly, so they had dry rot in them. That caused the line to split. And that bridge was held up by stanchions. It wasn't a free, standing bridge, an arch. So it took the stanchions out. And then after a period of time, the bridge actually, fell on top of the carriages after the
train. So that didn't happen straight away?
No, it didn't happen straight away. The train had stopped. There was a couple of girls standing there. I sort of reassured them, said everything's okay, the train stopped, because you can imagine the noise and the screech because the loco fell off, the front carriage fell on its side, I was in the front of the fourth one, so it was a really sudden stop, so obviously there was something drastically wrong, and I just thought, another train's hit it. So I said to the girls, everything's okay, the train stopped. So it took a period of time, because there's cars on the bridge and the weight, so it took a while for it to actually crash down on top of the carriage, but
in that period, the way that was, you were all sort of thinking, the train stopped. Someone will tell us, that it's going to move forward or move backwards or something. Did you feel that something else was going to happen then, and it wasn't going to be?
No. The train stopped, and I thought, obviously there was something drastically wrong, for it to stop so quickly. But one would assume, okay, it stopped. We'll open the doors, even though we're not at the railway station. And we'll get out or something will happen, that we'd be all right. Little did I know, you had no idea you were stopped parked under a bridge because, I was inside the carriage, so I couldn't see up.
Yeah.
And it was just unfortunate that the front of the fourth, which I was in, and the back of the third, was actually under the bridge. And I think there's only about 9 or 10 people actually survived, under the bridge.
Wow.
There were 31 people, killed in the carriage I was on, and there were 64 people in the carriage in total. Yeah.
Gosh.
So a big girder come down beside me, and that's what sort of saved me because it gave me a bit of space.
Oh.
But I couldn't get out because I was totally trapped, so I just gave up. And eventually I heard sirens, which was great. Then eventually, rescue people turned up. I was able to talk to them. And then eventually they sort of cut a bit of a hole to expose me. Legs were still crushed. They passed me car jacks. So my arms were free. So I was able to get the car jacks back towards my legs, and then jack slowly, which can only with car jacks, which was fortunate. Otherwise, you know, you got a rush of blood if you're squashed. So I eventually got the weight off my legs, and then eventually they could pull me out. But then, you know, I couldn't walk because my leg was so badly squashed that the nerves wouldn't work the muscles. So I couldn't walk. So I was off work for 6 months till, you know, I was able to at least walk.
Yeah, oh, my God. And do you still... what was the sort of psychological effects of the accident? How did you...
Oh, look, the psychological effects... on me, you know, I was probably fairly fortunate, and I've always had a positive outlook in life. So the psychological main effect is that every day I wake up's a bonus, because I could have been killed in you know, that accident very easily. I was really jumpy, but I don't remember the bridge actually coming down, but it must have made a horrendous noise. So a car blows horn, any abnormal noise, I'd jump. For months and months and months after, I'm all right now. But, you know, I was determined to recover, determined to get better because I had three young sons and wife. And the other thing is, you know, live life to the fullest without being stupid, I suppose, because every day's a bonus.
Were you off? I mean, I'm not sure what happened. I mean, these days you'd be offered counselling and other services. Did that happen?
No, that never happened. I was sort of in hospital for about 10 days.
Yeah.
Had a really good orthopaedic surgeon, John Harrison, who I've still keep in contact with, actually.
Yeah.
So he's always the only person in the Granville train smash I've kept constantly in contact with from day one. Never went to any reunions, anything like that, until just recently. Always talked, you know, to people about the accident, so I think that probably maybe, you know, helped me.
Yeah.
So by having a positive outlook, I haven't had psychological trauma like a lot of people. You know, I've still got psychological trauma, and, you know, it's very tragic for a lot of families as to what happened and the circumstances, you know, that they actually got onto the train and were actually, you know, very seriously injured, or because a lot of people lost a lot of loved ones, with 83 people killed.
And you said you did go to a reunion recently.
Yeah, I've only just sort of gone recently. A friend of mine said, you know, Gary Raymond, who was one of the first police rescue guys there, yeah, I was talking at a church group, and he just asked me to go along to Strathfield to, you know, hear the talk. And so I went along and met Gary, and so it's only the last, you know, 3 years that I've ever been involved in anything to do with it, really. And I mean, I'm not sorry I've been involved. It brings back a lot of memories, I guess. I think it's probably good for some people, maybe not so good for other people, in that it brings back such sad memories for them. But there's a, you know, a group of people that are, you know, trying to... you know, help the survivors and their and families that have lost loved ones in the Granville disaster, and they're a fairly active group. Barry Gable's the first ambulance officer there; he's involved with it. And Gary Raymond, they're the two, you know, main rescue people that are, you know, heavily involved and have been from, you know, since the accident happened.
Yeah, because I mean, you've got a shared experience, a terrible experience, which in some cases I suppose would help other people because they know that they've. You know, you've had a, you've gone through the same thing, and so maybe some people would be helped by having reunions. But
Sure, yeah, like everyone's different, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, it's a random thing, isn't it? Because people were just going all sorts of places. You had no common interests. It wasn't, you were just on a train. So it's a whole bunch of people which had no relationship prior to that.
None whatsoever.
So it'd be people from all walks of life and all different. Yeah. So
and a lot have got really good, strong friendships out of the tragedy, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been involved with it all. All the time, all the counselling and things like that, which was sort of ad lib. I mean, it's been done by a group, not by professional psychiatrists or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose. In many ways, that often helps people, doesn't it? Because they can talk to people who've had the same experience and help them, you know, get through it, I guess. What happened after you got out of hospital? What did you do then?
Oh, so after I got out of hospital, I was in there for, I think, 10 days. So I just come home. And the treatment at that start, well, while I was in hospital, they wired me up with all those electric leads and took me to a Royal Prince Alfred, I think, and put all this current of electricity through me, which was horrible. But that told them that my nerves hadn't actually been severed, because if nerves get severed, they're growing to the wrong ends. So my brain can tell my toe to move and my ankle would move, or you know, my arm would move, and they were worried about that, because if they went in the wrong ends, you know, it would be really tragic. But they could do microsurgery even in those days, you know, to get them on the right channel. So they knew they hadn't been severed, but because they were so badly squashed, they weren't communicating. So your leg whizzes away, you know, because your muscles aren't working.
Yeah.
So I had to get into water, spas and the sea and things like that, you know. So the therapy was, you know, water movement on the injured part, and then eventually, over a long period of time, took me 12 months to walk properly, but 6 months I could go back to work because I had a caliper, because my foot just dropped, just totally dropped on one leg. Yeah. There was no control. There was no control over my ankle or foot or anything.
Yeah.
And I thought, geez, you know, it's scary, but it'll come back. So there was, yeah, it'll come back. So it did come back eventually. I'm fine now. So over a period of time, those nerves recovered sufficient to work the muscles. And once they start to work the muscles start to grow back and get, you know, normal again.
Yeah.
So eventually I was all right. So that was my therapy. I didn't have to go to physio, did my own physio at home. Whereas nowadays, I mean, people go to physio for all sorts of things, don't they?
Yeah.
After they've had operations and all sorts of things. There was none of that, no counselling, nothing. You're just on your own, but under a doctor, right? So yeah. John Harrison, you know, as a young doctor, I was his first ever patient. He's an Australian water polo player. Still contact him because he was allocated me when I went to Parramatta Hospital. So
yeah.
As soon as they got you out, they hit the sirens, all the roads were blocked off, bang, straight to Parramatta Hospital, got assessed, and you got a, you know, doctor appointed to you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that was my treatment. Self-treatment under the directions of a doctor, didn't go anywhere, wasn't supervised.
So you didn't cost
the willpower to do it.
You didn't cost the health system too much.
No, I didn't cost anything. Nothing. No, that's right.
They wish they had more people like you.
Well, it doesn't happen nowadays, does it? Everything's under supervision and everything.
Oh yeah, I've been involved with the hospital system just recently, and it's like a big, finely tuned machine. You're never quite sure what's going on at any particular time.
Professional physiotherapists do 5 years at uni to get a job, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and nurses as well, you know.
They
just used to do on-the-job training originally, didn't they?
Yeah.
But anyway, it's great to hear that you've come through it well anyway, Bruce. It's an inspiring story for a lot of people.
Sorry for the ones that haven't. You know, a lot of people very much still suffering that I see, you know, when I go to the odd reunion things. And it's 40 years, so I'll go to the 40th year one.
Yeah. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks, isn't it? So anyway, look, it's good to hear from you. You've got a positive story to tell. That was great to hear that you actually got through it. Terrible thing for a lot of families in Australia.
Yeah.
I suppose there were people from interstate as well, were there?
Like the good thing, well, the good and the bad thing, like when it happened, there was no moaning or groaning, so that sort of didn't affect me. You know, people were either alive or dead, which was sad. But it would have been really traumatic if someone was near me, you know, wanted help and I couldn't move to help them. So,
yeah, that would have been awful.
You know, that was something, I suppose. But,